Jewish Latin Princess, Episode 4, Barbara Stanny, money coach and best-selling author.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast by Ya'el. Every week, get your dose of inspiration from the world's most uniquely talented Jewish women, and from Ya'el herself, seeking profound and practical ways to live a joyful, richer Jewish life. Welcome to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. And now, Jewish lifestyle expert and bilingual blogger at JewishLatinPrincess.com, your host, Ya'el.
You're listening to Jewish Latin Princess, everybody. I'm Ya'el Trush, your host. Welcome back. Did you ever think to connect spirituality with your personal finances? It's a pretty radical concept, right? Well, let me tell you, in today's interview with Barbara Stanny, you will take a journey into the spiritual work of wealth. Barbara Stanny is the leading authority on women and money. She is a best-selling author. Her latest book is Sacred Success, which we talk about today on the show. She is a sought-after speaker and a money coach. And Barbara and I get really spiritual and have one of the deepest and loveliest conversations I've had in a really long time. And it's all about money, which is kind of interesting. So not only is Barbara a wealth of, no pun intended, of practical wisdom when it comes to personal finance, but she's able to take us through the spiritual work of wealth building and through the journey of wealth building within a female framework and acknowledging our female power and our feminine natures. This is an interview that you won't want to miss. Barbara and I talk about fear, about honoring the feminine energy in the world, three levels of financial development, and what is greatness and how does that fit into the picture? Barbara defines sacred success for us, of course, and what it is to be a powerful woman. Where does charity fall into our wealth building and how women give differently than men? We talk about our legacy and you will love what Barbara's sweetest, fondest Jewish memory is. I hope you enjoy this interview as I did bringing it to you. Enjoy the show. Barbara Stanny, welcome to Jewish Latin Princess.
Well, thanks. It's so good to be here.
Thank you. It's really just such an honor to have you on the show, sharing your wisdom with my listeners. Barbara, you are a money coach, an authority in the topic of women and money, and the author of 6 books, among them classics like Overcoming Under-Earning, which I've read and my family has too. Well, we actually read a lot of them, but Secrets of Six-Figure Women, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, and of course, your latest book, Sacred Success, A Course in Financial Miracles, which we'll talk about today. And I'm sure you'll have a lot to share with us. So I want to get started with an important Jewish principle that I like to share here a lot, and it's that principle of divine providence, or in Hebrew we call it Hashgacha Pratit, which means, in a nutshell, that God is intimately involved in every single aspect of our lives and of all his creations, from the flutter of a leaf to our conversation here today. And we usually don't see it because, of course, God is concealed within nature. But there are certain times in our lives where we do get to see a glimpse of that divine intervention, that really there's something greater happening, and usually might be after the fact. And so I want to go back to that time in San Francisco where there really was a moment of divine providence that occurred when you had hit rock bottom and an opportunity landed on you seemingly out of nowhere, yet it turned to be really pivotal in your life.
And I assume you mean the interviews with women who are smart with money?
Yes. Is that what you're referring to? Yes, yes. You were going through a very tough phase and then this happened.
So can I just set it up a little
yes,
bit?
Yes, go for
that,
it.
That I grew up in a wealthy family.
Right.
And the only, my father was the R of H&R Block, and the only advice he gave me about money was don't worry, which I thought was great advice because I never wanted to worry. But it turned out my husband, who was a stockbroker, was a compulsive gambler. And so throughout the course of our 15-year marriage, I found out several times a year he had gambled away the money, and I continued to let him manage it because that's how terrified I was. And so I was really at my wit's end. I didn't know what to do. And finally, we got a divorce. And after my divorce, I decided money, I don't want to deal with money. It's just not my thing. And I have this theory, if you don't deal with your money will deal with you.
Right.
And so I knew I got tax bills for over $1 million.
Holy moly.
My ex didn't pay for illegal deals. He got us in. My ex had left the country. He went back to Israel. I did not have $1 million, not close to it.
Uh-huh.
My father wouldn't lend me the money. So that's when I knew I had to get smart. And I swear, every time I'd look at anything financial, my eyes would glaze over, my brain would fog up. I just felt terminally stupid.
Uh-huh.
And then divine intervention.
Right.
I was a journalist with the San Francisco Business Times.
Mm-hmm.
I got a freelance project to interview women who were smart about money.
Mm-hmm.
And those interviews changed my life, really, literally. I not only got smart about money,
mm-hmm.
but I wrote my first book, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, How Women Get Smart About Money.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I had this whole new career. And I've been working with women and money for over 40 years.
It's really incredible. And Barbara, that point when your father, who potentially could have saved you out of this predicament... when he said no, how did you feel?
At the time, I was furious. I was furious. I screamed at him, what am I supposed to do? Learn to live on less. And I hung up on him. And I was furious, but more than that, I was scared. I had these three daughters. One was just a baby.
Right.
I didn't know what I was going to do.
Right.
I kept going to the ATM and there was no money in the bank. I was a journalist, but I was not making enough money.
Right.
I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified.
Did you feel like God had abandoned you? I think I read that.
I totally felt God had abandoned
me.
But what I realized later is that I had abandoned God. One of the things about divine intervention, you said, sometimes you can only see it in hindsight.
Right.
I realized born into the family I was born into, marrying the man I married,
mm-hmm.
was all divinely guided.
Right.
So that I could do what I was put on this earth to do, and that was empower women.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so
I don't see just empowering women financially. I believe I coined a term for the work I do, and it's metaphysical.
Uh-huh.
And I really believe that when you bring the divine into your conversation about the almighty dollar, that financial success becomes a practical process. It becomes a spiritual practice.
It's a spiritual practice. Let's move on to that. So you learned, you realized that God has really done the greatest kindness imaginable because
but that took years.
Right.
That took
years. I'm sure it's all a journey. And you started working on yourself and you started creating this vessel for blessings to come into your life. And not only for yourself, but then you're giving it over to other women. You're really teaching them about the outer work of wealth and the inner work of wealth. And now, like you said, this other spiritual level, this higher work of wealth. Tell us what that is and how does it integrate with the other areas of working our wealth?
Well, I really believe that each of us are here for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important that we do, that God has a purpose for us and that we do our best to live that purpose.
Right.
And I truly believe you cannot live your purpose and play full out if you're drowning in dread and struggling to make ends meet.
Right.
So the higher work is understanding what our purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
The outer work is educating yourself about finances. The inner work is really doing the emotional work, the psychological work, really looking at your attitudes, beliefs, and decisions you made about yourself and money. And at the same time, look at how, because most women are not motivated by money. Once we have enough,
mm-hmm.
once a woman has money, enough money for food on the table, a roof over her head, a mani-pedi, you know, she's no longer motivated by money. What motivates us is the desire to help others.
Right.
And so this is what money is about. This is why we want to be good stewards of our money, so we can use our money to live our best life, to help to change the world, to make a difference.
Right, right. I mean, you've taken a very bold step in almost unprecedented in the world of personal finance to equate the divine or godliness with money. And as Jews, we understand that. I mean, it's obvious to us as a tradition that God wants us to have money, that there's godliness in money, that he gives it to us to allow us to do his work in this world. And it's so, so intertwined with our potential and everything we're here to do. So it didn't surprise me to read this, but I felt like, wow, she's really going at it. Did you fear taking that bold step?
Oh, you have no idea. So spirituality has always been a very important part of my life, and is a very important part of my getting, really understanding money when I brought God in.
Right.
But to be able to say this in public, it took me 7 years to write Sacred Success.
Ooh, seven, yeah. A complete cycle. I had to say that. The number seven is a complete cycle. I love it.
Right. All my books, I believe, are spiritual.
Right.
But I was in my spiritual closet, and people who are also spiritual, who are also, you know, divinely oriented, mm-hmm. they will understand.
Right.
But this one, I came out of my spiritual closet. I really told the truth how I see it. Like, too many spiritual books that deal with money don't deal with the practical. Too many practical books don't deal with the spiritual. I wanted to bring both together.
Right. So when you teach us to that success is on the other side of fear, and that we have to overcome our fears, and greatness is really once we step out of that comfort zone and we learn to just live with the fear and just let it be there and, you know, ignore it, so to speak. You really walk the talk. You're a living example. You're not just saying it.
Oh, damn. Damn straight. I do that every day. But here's the thing. What I think it was. So after I wrote Prince Charming Isn't Coming, and I really understood how to manage money and do very well, uh-huh. I suddenly had this whole new career where I was traveling over the country, teaching women, doing financial education for women.
Right.
But I couldn't make money.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't make money. And I don't understand it because my book was selling. So I interviewed, so I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to interview women who make six figures, and that's how I'm going to learn. And sure enough, I made six figures before I even finished writing the book, Secrets of Six Figure Women. And the biggest thing, many things I learned from them, but probably one of the biggest, was I expected these women to be very confident, very, and they were. But as we get deeper into the interviews, I saw how virtually every one of them, 155 I interviewed, every one of them struggled with fear, struggled with self-doubt, were afraid they were that they were a fraud and others would find out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's just the same as me.
Right.
But the difference between them and me is they didn't let us stop them.
Exactly.
They felt the fear and did it anyway.
Exactly.
And that was a watershed moment for me to realize you can be afraid. There is no such thing, I have learned, from the women, successful women I've interviewed, there's no such thing as fearless in the world
mm-hmm.
of achievement. There's no such thing as fearless, but there is such thing. Courage is not the absence of fear. It's the willingness to walk through the fear.
Right. Which you talk in a section in your book about this struggle between the ego and the source, which translated into Jewish mystical terms would be, yes, the ego, or what we call the Yetzer Hara, that basic animalistic drive for self survival and protect, you know, you want to protect the self, versus the transcendental soul that just wants to connect to a higher purpose. And we live with that struggle constantly. And that's really what you're referring to, right? Our soul has a higher drive and we have to respond to its calling, or we're just going to succumb to the forces of our ego, which are going to keep us protected on our couch, not achieving much, right?
Well, let me explain it a little bit fuller.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you got it. But we all have two voices in our head. We have many voices, but they all boil down to one. Either it's the voice of love or the voice of fear.
Yes.
And the ego is the voice of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in defense of the ego is not bad.
No.
The ego is wants to protect us.
Protect
its whole job is to protect us, and it learned how to protect us as a child.
Right. A baby needs to cry to get food.
Yes. And I learned very early that girls should be seen and not heard. I learned very early that you do not talk about money. I learned these things very early. So when I was going through my financial chaos with my husband, my ego was saying, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody.
Right.
I was in what do they call it? Freudian psychology. I was in psychotherapy for 3 days a week, psychoanalysis.
Uh-huh.
And I never told my therapist about my problems. So our ego wants to protect us. But the way, and it learned how to protect us as a child, but what protected us as a child will suffocate us as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
The soul is our direct connection to God.
Right.
And so the ego always speaks first, always speaks loudest.
Right.
The soul is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is to get quiet so you can listen to your soul's truth and not the ego's fear. Because the ego never shuts up. and our job is not to make it shut up. Because what you resist persists. It's like you just say, like the whole time I was writing my book, Sacred Success, ego was having a field day. Oh my God, what are people going to think? This is so stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. What are people going to think if you write about spirituality and money? And I would just say, thank you for sharing.
Right.
And I try to get quiet, take a few deep breaths, and say, this is God's plan for me. I don't know why. I don't know what the hell is going on. But this is God's plan for me.
Right. Yeah, I always tell my students, you got to know your ego for who she is, and you got to call her out on things. Just know what she's going to say. And I think you even laid out a few ways that we can identify what's the voice of the ego, right?
Right. The ego, it's always from fear.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to tell. If something is from fear, it's always ego. If something is from if you're going towards something because you love it, it's from soul. If you're running away from something because you're scared, that's the ego.
Right.
And the ego's loud and screaming and constant, and the soul is quiet and whispering and very patient.
Wow. Talk to me, Barbara, about you touch on a very important concept in your book, and that's the female face of power. And I want you to describe this for us, and then I'm going to give you a little bit of my Jewish twist on this, because this is very important.
I'd love to hear your Jewish twist. So when I wrote my very first book, Prince Charming Isn't Coming, and I interviewed women who were smart about money, and I realized as I got deeper into the interviews, their problems with money weren't about money.
Mm-hmm.
It was their fear of or ambivalence about power.
Mm-hmm.
Because becoming financially successful and financially responsible requires that we become responsible adults, that we step into our full power. And I remember saying to a psychologist, interviewing her for the book, and saying, you know, I'm really seeing that women are very afraid of their power. And why is that? And she said to me, powerful women have been burned at the stake.
They have.
And I think it is in our collective unconsciousness that women have been punished brutally for being powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I hope to do is develop a feminine understanding of what power means to us. Because to men and women see power through very different lenses.
Correct.
Men, power is about control and dominance and power over.
Mm-hmm.
Women, it's all about collaboration. It's power with.
Right.
My definition of a powerful woman is someone who knows who she is, who knows who she wants, and expresses that in the world unapologetically.
Right.
And that's that fear of upsetting the apple cart, that fear of confrontation, of speaking our truth, is why we water ourselves down.
But is it a little bit because we have unconsciously, perhaps, or subconsciously, I'm not sure what would be the right term here, but taken on the male definition of power onto ourselves, and that will always be out of zinc, out of whack, because like you said before, we see power completely different, and our souls are different, Barbara. We operate on a different mode, and we'll never be balanced if we're behaving through the male paradigm of power instead of through the female paradigm of power.
Yeah, there's two issues going on here. One, there's a tendency for women, especially in the beginning, you know, when they're younger, to want to imitate men,
right,
to be bullies, to be power over.
Right.
That's not power. That's just dominance and control.
Mm-hmm.
For women, power means, because we are so relationship oriented.
Right.
Very. Every single successful woman I have interviewed said some form of this: there is a little girl inside me that just wants to be liked. And so when speaking our truth can be very upsetting to other people. Speaking our truth means making tough decisions that often have a negative effect on other people. And what I learned from these successful women in the world of work, yes, we want to be liked, in the world of work, their mindset was different. In the world of work, I'd rather be respected than liked.
Mm-hmm.
But in their personal lives, they had their, what I call their love nest, you know, their family, their friends, their children, people who love them, people who they could be scared than a little girl with.
Right.
But when it comes to the world, I'd rather be respected and liked should be what we are after.
Right, 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 right. So it's really an important, what you're communicating to women is it's very, very significant, because I'm just going to give you a little bit of a mystical twist.
Please.
To this.
I love
That when we talk about a time of Mashiach, a messianic time, and of course, when we say that word in English, it kind of brings all sorts of other connotations that are not Jewish, but for lack of a better, so it is the transformation that will happen in the world is one where, of course, everything has a godly spark, and it's right now it's concealed, but through this transformation, everything, the godly spark and everything will be revealed. Moreover, the sages teach us that the feminine attribute of godliness, of God, will permeate, will be revealed. It's called the Shekhinah. It's a higher level of God. And so we see that the transformation that's happening in the physical world with the things that you're teaching us and others, and really everything that's happening in terms of women empowerment and all sorts of things, really have a spiritual root in what's really happening at the higher level, which is a spiritual transformation towards a better world. So that's why I think what you're communicating in this book with this concept of the feminine power is such, it's an important thing. It's a very important thing. And obviously it's very timely. It came to you because it's what we're living. It's a real transformation that we're living right now.
See, I believe in this, the world, the chaos and all the upheaval we're experiencing. And as we move into this, what has been called this new paradigm,
right.
I believe it is imperative. It is critical that women, empowered women, along with enlightened men, step up to the plate and in our power.
Absolutely.
So that we can work in partnership.
Absolutely.
To heal this planet, to change this
absolutely.
World.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what I love about your message is that you recognize that we are different, that our souls are different, and thus our perceptions about money and success and everything else are different. Not better, not worse, right? But rather that there's beauty and value in the difference, that we can work together. And that's really when the real transformation is going to happen, when everything is in balance.
Right. I don't think our souls are different.
Okay, tell me.
I think our natures are different.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe my interpretation is different, but I see the soul, and we all have the spark of God in
right.
us.
Right. Absolutely.
But men express themselves differently. I mean, I see my grandkids.
Yeah.
My little 8-month-old loves to play with trucks. He loves to play with trucks. When my 6-year-old was 8 months, she loved to play with dolls.
Right.
Her parents didn't do anything. We have a different nature. And I think when we ourselves and the world in general come to honor the Shekhinah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you
pronounce it? Shekhinah. Yes.
Shekhinah. then it's going to be a different world.
It is. It is. I love that word, honor. Yeah, that's exactly what needs to happen, that we all honor those differences. It's like, I have a good friend who says, you know, my son, when she has a son, she says, my son, when he was a little boy, you would give him a Barbie, like he would go play by his cousins, and immediately the Barbie, he would be banging stuff with the Barbie, you know?
So true.
Ay vey. So yeah. So if we pursue this higher mission, if we really connect and, you know, we're still enough that we can, you know, listen to our soul and get to a place where we know that we have a higher purpose and we're able to define it and kind of work through it. You always have to take little steps and you get guidance and whatever, but we're starting to create an impact in the world and we feel like we're living within our mission, within the plan that God wants for us. And does that automatically translate into financial success? Like, map this out for us a little bit, Barbara. Like, how does it connect? What is it? What things need to be in place for that magic to occur?
So there's three levels of financial development. There is survival, mm-hmm. stability, and affluence. Mm-hmm. To go from survival to stability, you must have a profit motive. You must love money. Money's a good thing.
Right.
You must be
right.
Okay with making it. So many of us have mixed messages.
Yes.
About money. And until we heal these internal conflicts regarding money and power, we will always be a little financially wobbly. Mm-hmm. But once we become financially stable, and for those who desire, and survival just means not enough, stability enough, and affluence more than enough. Mm-hmm. So stability is fine. But for those of us who want more than enough, so what's the Jewish word? Tiki olim? What's it?
Tikkun olam. Tikkun olam. To prepare the world.
Yes. Because I think going from stability to affluence is our opportunity to repair the world.
Yes.
And for those who are being called. And so, but it's a different process. To go from stability to affluence, profit is definitely a desired outcome, but it's no longer the primary goal. Mm-hmm. The primary goal is greatness. And I describe greatness by paraphrasing a quote by Fred Buchner. And greatness is that place where our deep gladness, doing what we are here to do, meets the world's deep hunger. And this process of going from stability to affluence is what I call sacred success.
Right.
And sacred success means pursuing your soul's purpose for your own bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Brings you great. And the world and the world to benefit the world while being richly rewarded.
Right. And does it? It doesn't have to be a high-profile public recognition.
Oh,
type
not
of
at
thing.
All.
Right. Okay.
Oh, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
It could be becoming a better mother.
Right.
It could be if someone's managing your money, or you have your husband's working, and you're not working. At least participate in financial decisions from a place of knowledge and not fear, ignorance, or habit.
Right. Right. I say that again. I love that. Participate in
financial decisions from a place of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Not fear, ignorance, or habit, just how most of us manage our money. And so, because see, you can have money. There's two kinds of powerful women. There's two kinds of affluent women. There's the powerful affluent and the precarious affluent.
Okay.
And the precarious affluent may have money, whether she inherited it, married it, or earned it. But it's like her money is like sitting on a two-legged stool. She feels very wobbly. She doesn't understand. She doesn't enjoy. She doesn't know how to use the money to make a difference, to improve her world. Powerful affluence. They know that money is simply a tool for doing what they're put on this planet to do.
Right, which is a perfect segue to my next question, and I'll tell you a story that you reminded me of a little bit later. We can't talk about money without talking about charity, about tzedakah, and of course, it's such a fundamental Jewish value. Talk to me about where charity falls in your value system, and are you very systematic in your giving, sorry, any habits around giving that you're very meticulous about? What's your take on all this?
So you asked me several questions. Mm-hmm. So what I saw is because we women are, once we're financially stable, are not motivated by money. We're motivated by helping others. Mm-hmm. In every successful woman's narrative, charity, philanthropy played a big role. So it's a very key part for men and women. But men and women give differently.
Yes.
Men tend to give. Now, this is general, but they tend to give so a building is named after them for the prestige and to be on a board. Women tend to give to help the community, to teach their children, to give back. And so I think philanthropy is important, but what I learned very early, and I learned this because my parents were very philanthropic, mm-hmm. is I learned there's a powerful way of giving and a really unhealthy way of giving. Oh, and what I learned is to give, is to really look at what's important for you. Because I used to give, you know, I put dimes in the market, and I put in market those plastic boxes, and right. anybody yes. who would call me for to give to the police circus, I would give. I would just give everything. Anybody ask, I would give. And what I realized is this is not powerful giving. Focused giving is powerful giving. So I have my priorities. I learn what's important to me. And surprise, surprise, helping women is really important to me.
Right.
So I give two ways. One, I give to the women's organizations. Like, what's very important to me is the abuse center at my local victim of abuse center. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's called the Dunn House. So I give to that. But I also give to women I know and to women who work for me. I also pay them well. Very well. I help them, women who are over the hump. I'll lend them money, and if they pay me back, great. If they don't, fine. I love to help women over the hump. I paid for my cleaning lady's match.com for years, and she met the guy she's engaged to.
That's amazing. That's so beautiful.
And it's not tax deductible, but I love to give to women I know need it, and to organizations that I know where the money is going. And it's not to carpet their offices.
Right.
When I give to organizations, I love to give matching grants. So I'll donate a certain amount if they can raise a matching amount.
Super cool. Super cool. I'm going to tell you a short story that I just thought about before. When we're talking about the mission, there's a beautiful Hasidic story about Reb Susha of Annapolis. And when Reb Susha was in his dying bed, he expressed some fears, and his disciples said, what are you afraid of? And I might be getting some details off, but basically the gist of the story is beautiful, is he communicated that when he passes on to the next world, he's not scared, because they said, you are who you are. You're such a tzaddik, such a righteous person. Well, I'm not scared that they should ask me, Susha, why weren't you like Moshe Rabbeinu, like Moses, or why weren't you like Avram? I'm scared when they'll ask me, Susha, why weren't you like Susha? That is the question. Why have you, and that's the question that we all have to ask ourselves. Susha, are you being like Susha? You know, Yael, are you being Yael, the Yael that I know I put in this world to be, the Barbara that I've put in this world? You know, are you really realizing your potential to your fullest? And it's one of my favorite stories, because it's so important.
And here's another one. It's not a story. That was a great story. I love that story. here's a question that you can, and anyone who's listening can ask themselves. Imagine it's very far in the future, and you are on your deathbed, mm-hmm. and you know you just have a little time to live. And as you think over your life, everything you've done and everything you've been able to accomplish, what are you most proud of? What are you most proud of everything? Mm-hmm. And that is what your legacy needs to be. It may not be building a bigger business or selling more books.
Right.
It's the legacy you want to leave, how you want to be remembered. And yes, it's being more of you, really listening to your soul and doing what you're put on this planet to do.
Right, right.
And that's really what financial success is all about.
And Barbara, I feel like this last book was sort of a culmination of such a journey for you, but I think like there's so much more in store. Like, what's next? What do you think is happening next? What are we getting from Barbara Stanny?
So it's so interesting you ask that, yeah. Uh-huh. It's so interesting because in sacred success, it goes through four stages. And the first stage is the call to greatness. Mm-hmm. And the call to greatness comes as signs. The signs of the call to greatness is feeling burnt out, feeling frustrated, feeling unhappy, feeling restless, kind of going through different crises even. And about last fall, I started getting the call. I started feeling really, I don't know, restless. Mm-hmm. Not, I wasn't loving my work. Something was wrong. So I went into stage two, which is receptive surrender, and I took the month of December pretty much off. And I really looked at what's next for me. And I realized, I don't know what's next, but I know I have to create space for something to come in. So two of my favorite courses that I teach, my Sacred Success Retreat, mm-hmm. and Overcoming Under Earning, this will be my last year to teach them. I'm letting those go. And so this is a really, really, it's scary to let things go. But always, to bring the new in, you have to create space for it to arrive. So I'm in this place now of not where I was, and I have no idea where I'm going. But I know I'm creating space for something, as Carl Jung said, for better to come, good must stand aside.
Right, right. You have to create space. Yeah, I know.
So I'm creating space here.
I'm sure, and I can't wait.
Me neither.
Take all the space that you need, because I feel like what's coming, it's going to be beyond good.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your faith in me. That feels really good.
Speaking really of, good. This might air after Passover, but I can't not ask the question. Do you have any traditions around Passover, Barbara? Anything that you do special? Do you celebrate the holiday, and how do you do it if you do?
Nope, I don't celebrate the holiday.
No, nothing. It's so funny that you. I had to ask the question because of the conversation we had before, and I'm going to give you like a 2-minute mystical inspiration on the holiday of Passover, which I know you will appreciate. That the word Mitzrayim, the word Egypt, means Mitzarim. It means limitations. So basically, when we're going through Passover, we're experiencing the Seder, those 15 steps of the Seder on the entire holiday, we're breaking free from our limitations, from things that constrained us, things that aren't. And so every year when we go through that, we're really spiritually meant to kind of like break free of whatever's holding us back, those fears, those beliefs in our subconscious, in any area of our life. So I thought that I would share that with you.
Thank you. Then I am celebrating Passover in my own way.
There you go.
I'm breaking free of limitations.
And I hope.
Without the matzah.
Okay, without the matzah. But the matzah is the bread of faith. But I thought that you would appreciate that because it's in line with your work. All right, so let's get to something fun. Let's do some JLP fill in the blanks, which is where I give you a sentence and you'll complete it with the first thing that comes to mind. And there are no wrong or right answers. We really all get inspired and learn so much from each other, and we all have unique responses. So here we go. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. I am Barbara Stanny, and I feel most spiritual when...
All the time.
Ooh, I never heard that one. I believe it.
There isn't a moment when I don't feel spiritual.
I believe it. I believe you, Barbara.
Yeah. I know when I get disconnected from God.
Tell me. What do you mean?
When I start feeling scared and anxious and like I have to control, I know I'm disconnected. from God. So it's not that I'm not spiritual. Mm-hmm. I've just become disconnected from my spirituality. So I know I have to do what I need to do to get back in connection with God.
My favorite mitzvah, or one that I connect to the most, is?
My favorite mitzvah is when I work with women and they get it. They get it. They get what's been holding them back. Mm-hmm. They get their purpose. I just got a book in the mail called Passing Through Grief from a woman who was in my sacred success retreat. Mm-hmm. She lost her husband. She was lost. Mm-hmm. She was lost. And she found her purpose in that retreat, that four-day retreat. Mm-hmm. This was years ago, to be a grief counselor.
Wow.
And she became a grief counselor, and she just sent me this book just today and says, thank you for helping me discover my purpose at your sacred success retreat in gratitude.
Wow. So she's that's written a book, and that's how wonderful. That's so rewarding for you as a teacher. That's really just so beyond, amazing.
Beyond anything I could ever describe.
Wow. Wow. All right. My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is?
My fondest, sweetest Jewish memory is I married an Israeli, and being in Israel where everybody was Jewish.
Oh,
it's like,
so nice.
I got it. I was growing up, there was a lot of anti-Semitism where I was.
Oh, okay. Where did you grow up?
In the Midwest, in Kansas City.
Okay.
And my parents wanted to fit in. Mm-hmm. My mother, while she was very observant, she also was very embarrassed. And so I had this very conflicting feeling about Judaism.
Right.
And when I got to Israel and I saw everybody was Jewish, I became proud to be a Jew.
Right, like a weight lifted off your shoulders.
It was more like my heart opened to my heritage.
Right.
My heart opened. I was proud. This is not something to hide. I was proud.
Wow.
And ever since then, I am very open and proud to be a Jew.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. I miss Israel. When was the last time you were there?
Oh, God. 30 years. I don't know. I got divorced and I never went back.
Oh, you never went back. Okay. So now you have to add it to your to-do list to go back. And it's so beautiful. I haven't been back in 10 years, but my husband just went for business and he said, yeah, Elle, it's just so wonderful to be here. You would fall in love again if you would come. And so
yeah. My daughters go and visit their father and they say it is really changed though since we've been.
It's really changed. But I get that feeling when we are there. It's really our hearts open. We feel a connection to the land.
Yes.
There's a spiritual connection. There's no other way to explain it, right?
And just the whole history of how the state came to be.
Yeah.
It just fills me with pride.
So add it to your list of things to do. Take a vacation and go to Israel.
Okay.
All right. I think we touched on this. It was when I give tzedakah, I like to give two. And I think you've covered that, unless you want to tell me something else.
I like to give to people I know who need it and to women's organizations.
Right, right. And finally, I'm Barbara Stanny, and today I'm most grateful for?
I'm most grateful that you called me. That we could have this talk, that I could, that I wrote these books that people read, but that you and I could have this talk.
Thank you.
To Jewish women and just be really authentic and real. I'm very grateful for this conversation.
Thank you. That's beautiful. You just made my day and made me proud of everything I do. Thank you.
Well, you should be proud.
Thank you.
I often have interviews, but you're really good.
Oh.
You're really a good interviewer.
Thank you so much. And to everybody listening, we can find Barbara. You can find Barbara at barbarastanny.com, and that's STANNY, right? And you could get your newsletter. Oh, and I need to mention your Facebook group, Barbara. I'm a big fan of the Facebook group. So I encourage everybody to join. It's such a wonderful community in there.
But I have to also add that the first Monday of every month, I have a free call. And we have a huge community of women where we talk about money. And I promise you, We do not talk about money like men talk about money.
Oh, yes. I know. I've been on the call. I haven't been often because it doesn't work with my family schedule. It's like the peak time in my home. So I've only been there once and I couldn't even stay there the whole time. But I hear you. It is a wonderful, wonderful call. And I like to get the replay sometimes, and I kind of like brush over things that you guys went through. But that and the Facebook group and everything
and
that you're
producing. Out of that, the Facebook group, and we have over 2,000 members, and it's a very robust group. I mean, there's a real active conversation going on.
Yes, yes. And I love that you chime in and you also let others chime in, and it feels so supportive. And it really, really, Barbara, thank you. We really all appreciate your work. And I can't wait to see what more greatness is coming from you. I'm so proud of you, and really keep it up.
Thank you. You're lovely, and I really appreciate this.
Thank you. Thank you so, so much.
Thanks for listening to Jewish Latin Princess Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, and share the podcast with the Jewish women you love. To access today's show notes, ask Yael a question, or suggest a uniquely talented Jewish woman to be featured on the show, visit JewishLatinPrincess.com.